Welcome to the DL.
Monday morning. This is a big show today. Big show, sir. How are you?
We're live without a net.
Yeah. All right. Well, there's a couple things. We're going to talk about basketball most of the show. I just said to you before we started taping, I think we could do an entire half an hour, maybe even an hour on the Manchester United situation. Not only the fact that he got smoked by Liverpool and Nani had a hole in his leg and the aftermath from that, but the fact that they shut out the media completely. So maybe I'll either write about that or we'll spend 5 minutes at the end of the show. And like I said, today's going to be basketball heavy because this is my favorite week of the year. I know you like the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. I like conference championship week better. But before we get to that, we have a little bit of news. Would it be considered breaking news if we break our own news?
If no one else has broken it first, I suppose it's our news.
Breaking news. We're going to stop doing the show. And we teased it like for the last couple weeks, and I thought that was really shitty of me to do. And like I've tried not to, but you can't because once you make a decision. But here's the thing. We talked about maybe doing 600 shows and then stopping. And I don't think I can get to 600. I think maybe eventually I could get to 600, but I don't think I can get to 600 without some sort of break. And I go back to a few conversations that I had with friends of ours, and I'll keep this as quick as possible. When we decided to do a daily show, Jamie Mottram at Yahoo and Skeets, who was at Yahoo at the time and now is at The Score and does the Basketball Jones, basically said to me, you're going to go insane, and doing a daily show is nuts. And I said, no, we can do it. And I went insane, and doing a daily show is nuts, and they were totally right. But I was able to do it when I was still working for Sporting News and writing other stuff, doing baseball here and there and doing that. When the Sporting News thing stopped, I thought, well, let me just do the show as the centerpiece of a media-centric blog and just write media stuff and get my friends to do it. And the fact of the matter is, it didn't work. I still like to write stuff, but I just don't have the energy and drive to do it every day. It's just too much to handle. And it really comes down to the fact that I'm not making any money doing this. And it actually costs me a great deal of money to put the show on all the time for server space and things like that. So it's a cop-out. But I always said to you, Nick, that if we started doing the show half-assed, then we should stop doing it, right? I mean, I think that's what's happening here. I don't want to do it every day. I think the conversations you and I have had and the conversations we had with Ziller and some other people who've been on the show recently have been really good. I think the shows themselves have been really good. But the motivation's just not there, and it's not fair to the people who listen every day to do a half-assed show every day.
Well, that's very – it's not me, it's you. But I get exactly what you're saying. And, yeah, I mean, I don't think everyone – people are privy to a lot of the things we talk about because we bring them out. We talk about them on the show, and I guess that's sort of where we're going here is just sort of peeling back the curtain as far as it'll go and a lot of the conversations. And you know, and listen, I think that's the thing that people have always appreciated about any show, but it's and this show it falls in line with that, is when you're just honest and open about what's going on, you know, with your life, and I say you as a collectively, and so
right.
You know, and that's what this is. This is just saying, people, here's the deal, here's what's going on, and this is, you know, what you've always gotten from us, and what you're getting from us now is openness and honesty.
The hard part is, and look, there were a couple weeks ago where you had some work things going on and whatnot, and you missed a day or two, and I can always find somebody to fill in, or we missed a show here and there, and it's no big deal. The hard part for me, and I say this somewhat selfishly, obviously, is I don't have anybody else who can take over for a day. So if I can't do a show for a day, or if I don't want to do a show for a day, then we don't do a show that day. And I feel like we've been doing that too often. And look, it's all going to get back to the point of my kid. And we're going to map it out. Basically, I think that I can't get to 600. So we're going to do 555 because I like palindromes. And 555 is more than a palindrome. It's like a super palindrome. 555. It's going to be the week of the Masters. The week after, you know, we'll talk about the Masters and then... We can actually map it out where it's going to be right around Max's birthday, which I think is fair. Because when we found out that Max has hemophilia, it sort of changed everything. And nothing's wrong with the kid. But I see this little kid walking around or crawling around now. He's crawling now and sitting up, and he's got this helmet on, and we're putting foam bumpers in his crib, because if he throws his head back and hits his head, you know, we have a serious problem on our hands. And I look and I say, why am I playing in a sandbox? I should be worrying about my family and I should be making money. And I hate that, because it was never about that. It was never about making money. It was always about just doing what we love, talking to you, which we did before we started the show every day. And we said, why aren't we recording this? Because other people might find our opinions interesting. And then we got other friends and other big celebrity guests, and it sort of snowballed. And I still want to do this. I do. I can't do it for free. I can't look at my family at a daughter who's going to be 4 and a son who's going to be 1 and a wife who's making all the money that we make right now, basically. And it's not fair to them. I need to focus this amount of time on doing something more constructive because they need me more than you do. And by you, I don't mean you. Although maybe I mean you, Nick. But I mean the people who listen. I mean, look, it's so selfish. But I think I'm entitled to that. And I think I don't want to do a shitty product, and I don't want to just do shows once a week or twice a week. So I think right now, and this is, look, if you read the write-up today, hopefully it'll be hilarious to you because I'm going to call people out. People know where we are. People know that we are hireable. And we would take your offer if you hired us. And they've known that for 2 or 3 years. And they keep hiring other people. And maybe those other people are better. I don't think they are. I don't think that the people who are getting hired at other sites are better writers or know more about sports or have a better sense of what's going on. I don't. I think that we are one of the best shows. And when we write, I write, whatever, one of the best bloggers out there. People know where we are. So if you want to hire me or you want to hire me and Nick, if the money's right, I think Nick would probably take that. I don't want to speak for you. We'll do it. Radio station in Philadelphia. National blog site, we'll do it. But I'm not going to do it for free anymore because maybe we'll come back after the summer. I don't know. And I mean, that's depressing enough, right? Is there anything else that I forgot?
No, I mean, basically today's show is one big, you're holding up a will work for food sign. No, I'm kidding.
No, it's fine. I think that's fair. No, I think it comes to a time where I'm sick and tired of people who aren't as talented getting jobs. I think that's a part of this. I'm not holding anybody ransom. I got to hold the internet hostage like Buzz Bissinger does on fucking Twitter every day. Or Charlie Sheen. I mean, that's not what we're doing. But I'm just being honest here. You say peel back the curtain. This is honesty. I'm sick and tired of other people getting jobs. And it's frustrating. So you combine that with the fact that I need to provide for my family. And it becomes less of a labor of love and more of a labor. And I think I need a break. Or I need money. Ooh, excuse me.
Or do you need some cough medicine?
Yeah, how about that? Where'd that come from? It's like a frog literally sitting in my chest. All right, let's throw in some music.
It's a beautiful country out here. A frog and a bear seeing America. Moving right along in search of good times and good news. With good friends you can't lose. This could become a habit. Opportunity knocks once, let's reach out and grab it. Yeah! Together we'll nab it. We'll hitchhike bus or yellow cabbit. Cabbit? Moving right along. Foot loose and fancy free. Getting there is half the fun, come share it with me. Moving right along. We'll learn to share the load. We don't need a map to keep this show on the road.
There's no crying in basketball, or there is if you're the Miami Heat.
Apparently there is.
Right. Now, look, I don't want to spend too much. Should the Heat? It's obvious that LeBron James was crying. If you read the stories, everyone asks Eric Spoelstra who was crying. I'm not talking about Chris Bosh, not talking about it. But then if you read Brian Windhorst, who's like the most connected LeBron James, he's like in LeBron James's brain. He basically says an emotional James. Well, clearly it was him. Why would Dwayne Wade cry after that game? Because he's not getting the final shot in any of these games that they're losing? He should be pissed. And maybe he's so angry he's crying, but it clearly seems like LeBron James is so upset that he stinks in the clutch that he's now crying in front of his teammates. He never got to play college basketball. So this is his college, right? I mean, this is all he ever knows, getting paid to play basketball. So we always laud the college player for having so much emotion. You know, people are so quick to be like, multimillionaire guys crying about a regular season loss. I actually sort of find this endearing in a way.
I won't go as far as say endearing, but I don't have an issue with it per se. I mean, you ought to care about what you do enough, you know, especially if you're getting, I'm not going to say getting paid out. I'm sorry. I shouldn't even say who cares. If it's what you love and if you have something invested in it and you want, you know, crying's okay. It's fine. I don't care. But to me, this whole situation just brings up why GMs should be building teams and not players building teams. And that's sort of what this continues to feel like is these guys got together and were like, hey, let's all play together. That'd be awesome, wouldn't it? Yeah, that'd be awesome. And now they're finding out what it's really like. And it may not be everything they thought it was going to be. So, but it's as compelling a storyline as there is in sports right now. And I think You know, and Wade said it after the game. He said, well, everyone's happy right now because we're losing. Well, yeah, I mean, you set it up that way, and you guys took on the villain mantle, and you'll live. And I think that's – and I think he's living with it. He says, fine, you know, you want to be happy we're losing? Be happy we're losing. But it is up there right now, and just it makes what to me – and you and I always said we're not huge NBA fans. NBA is as compelling as anything right now, at top to bottom. I am actually interested in checking the scores, seeing who's winning, because I think as we get into clutch time, it's becoming very fascinating, and this is one of the most fascinating stories of all.
Well, it's this time of year, too. I mean, it's funny, because then it'll take a backseat for a month, because we'll all care about college basketball.
Sure, of course.
I don't so much believe the whole everybody wants us to lose thing. I think it's a better storyline if they're losing, because if they're just crushing teams, like when they went 21-1 or whatever in a span, people stop paying attention a little bit. So maybe he's right in the sense that people... It's a better storyline if they're losing, because these are great players who got smacked themselves together and they figured it out for a while and now they're struggling. But the better storyline is the fact, and maybe this is what Wade meant by this, Wade has always felt like the likable guy of these three. Bosch was riding their coattails, so everyone sort of resents that he's making so much money to be the third fiddle. Everyone knows that LeBron is the villain. And Wade has sort of been like, well, I never left my team. I just got great players to make our team great again. Like, I convinced my friends to come play for me. I'm not a bad guy, and I never was. But yet he's not getting the last shot in these games. He's sort of the tragic hero in all of this.
I guess in a way. I mean, yeah, kind of in a way. I don't know. I think they're all going to have equal blame heaped upon them for everything as well. Maybe not Bosch, because there's nothing equal about him. But, you know, you look at Riley, and you look at James, and you look at Wade. Yeah, I mean, I'll go back, you know, what you said about not everyone wanting them to lose. That's probably true, but I think they still have been set up as villains in a way for a certain kind of sports fan. And I think that's the kind of fan that we are and a lot of people we know are, which is sort of looking at this talented group of guys putting themselves together and anointing themselves before they've done anything. And you sort of root against that team. And that'll continue to happen. But, yeah, I mean, I think what they're finally doing is having to sit back and assess what's going on and saying, yeah, oh my gosh, maybe this wasn't this wasn't the best idea, but maybe we weren't ready to take up this mantle, and it's going to take some time to gel and figure out who we are and how we're going to play together, and we're having to do this on the biggest stage, and it doesn't feel good, and now there's some crying involved.
Look, they're losing to good teams. Chicago Bulls are a better team. Why isn't Dwayne Wade taking these shots at this point? I mean, at some point, you got to put the egos aside and say, all right, look, LeBron, you get us to the point where we're winning. And then if we need a shot at the end for some odd reason, then we'll give it to Wade. I mean, I just think there's stat people hate this, but there is a clutch factor in sports. And I don't know if LeBron James has ever been clutch. He's never needed to be because he's just so much more talented than everyone. You know, you look at some of these guys who are so great and never had to win a close game in high school, and maybe he didn't play college, but never had to win a close game in whatever. And then they get to a situation where they need to win a close game and you're like, oh, wow, these guys can't win close games. I mean, wasn't there an issue with Jay Cutler not being clutch? Because he was probably the best player in his high school, and then he went to Vanderbilt, and their team stunk, so all he had to do was throw the ball around the field because they were going to lose those games anyway in the SEC. He didn't need to be clutch because they weren't winning games. And then when he gets to the NFL, they're like, this guy's not clutch. Well, yeah, because he never had to be. He never learned how to be. That's sort of how LeBron is. I mean, obviously, when he got to the finals with the Cavs, I mean, he has made big shots. LeBron has been clutch. You've seen these three-point... But maybe he just hasn't done it as much as other guys. I mean, Wade got his team to a Final Four. Had no business being in the Final Four. Carmelo Anthony carried Syracuse to a national championship. Some of these guys have been clutch before in big spots. And maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's sort of a learned ability to be clutch.
I think that's part of it. I mean, at the same time, if you're a good basketball player, you're a good basketball player. I don't know that, you know, and he's been in the league long enough. He's been in enough situations. He's been on good teams that have needed him to help them win. I don't have the stats in front of me of how many game-winning shots or, you know, shots in the last 30 seconds he's ever hit. Obviously, this year, it's terrible. I think they're shooting 1 for 15 in under 30 seconds, losing or something like that. But I think if you're a clutch player, you're a clutch player. I don't know you're going to learn on a certain level. Either you got it or you don't. And I don't even, and I'm not also willing to write a guy off at the beginning of his career and say, or I mean in the middle of his career and say he can never do it.
No, certainly.
But we sat around here for years and said, boy, we love Allen Iverson. Allen Iverson is such a warrior. He's such a tough guy. You know, he plays with, you know, till his body is falling apart. But you know what? He couldn't hit that shot in the end. And I think he only did it once or twice. And we kept harping on it because it never happened. But he was our guy, and I think Randall, he got protected a lot. And a lot of the league people, you know, for the most part, seemed to like him. Obviously, there were other people who hated him, detested him. But I think the basketball public at large liked him. But I don't think a lot of people saw that because it wasn't on the same stage where you're looking at it saying, you have to deliver for this team. What's happened is LeBron has set himself up this way. He's made it so you're the marquee player in the league. You're on the marquee team as far as attention in the league. And if you don't get it done, we're going to look at you every single day and night. He can't escape it. And that's what's magnifying everything right now, is that he's put himself on that stage and hasn't been able to deliver. And until he does, it's going to keep – people are going to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's you're absolutely right. I mean, it's the best storyline. This isn't a manufactured storyline. Like, the Heatles and all the decision stuff was totally manufactured. But this is a legitimate storyline, too. And we always try and see through what's junk and just, you know, sports writers trying to make something out of nothing. But this is a really compelling situation. Just the sense in the locker room. If you were a beat writer for this team, there's a book in this. And I'm sure that Brian Windhorst, you know, I'm sure he went to Miami with the intention of writing the next LeBron James book. And hopefully he won't shit on LeBron like Bissinger does every second he can after writing a book with the guy. This is a really, really, I mean, I thought that Scholes, who was doing sort of a recap of every, they stopped doing it, but a recap of every single game with Deadspin, like, there's a book in there somewhere. And maybe he'll do it. Maybe Scholes will be the one to sort of, I mean, obviously the guy knows how to write a book about basketball. So there's something in there, and it may take 2 years. You know, it may not, this is sort of like a Grant Wall's book with the LA Galaxy and David Beckham going to LA, the Beckham experiment. Like, this is, there's a similar feel to this. The LeBron experiment, or whatever you want to call it, which is really transcends the NBA. The one thing I will say about yesterday's game, if you listen to some people on Twitter or read some of them, that this is what's great about the NBA. You had Derrick Rose, who's just an absolute star, going up against the three-headed monster in Miami. It still felt like a college game in a sense. There was a lot on the line. It was a precursor to what was going to happen in the playoffs. The Bulls were on the road, and if you notice, it was 87-86. I mean, what kind of score is that for an NBA game? Both teams shot under 50%. The Bulls won the game shooting 46% from the field and 21% from three. Ohio State mocks those numbers. Ohio State, by the way, shot like 80% from the field in crushing 14 of 15 from three. Did you see this? 14 of 15 from three in beating a number 10 Wisconsin team. So we'll spin it to college basketball with that. As much as that NBA game felt like college basketball, we get to dip our bodies in college basketball from now. The regular season is over. North Carolina can put up their banner that they beat Duke and they're the ACC champion, by the way, coming out of nowhere, because I thought nobody felt this team was any good at the beginning of the season. But now we get to fully immerse in championship week, which, again, I said at the beginning of the show, my favorite week of the year. Conference tournaments, my favorite, because the teams know each other. This isn't like, you know, I mean, as much as I love Cinderella's in the NCAA tournament, you can catch a team on a bad game. These teams know each other. These teams hate each other. And the refs know that it's such a great week.
Oh, it is. And it's what I love about it right now is, you know, the nervousness begins for the teams on the bubble. And I, you know, my alma mater is on the bubble. They consistently are on the last four in list. So I'm looking right now and I'm seeing this, you know, the Colonial tournament. I think it ends up tonight. I think it's the games tonight, but it's, you know, George Mason lost yesterday and they're the one team that projected to be in. Now everyone says that ODU is going to make it, but now VCU has a chance to knock them off. And if VCU knocks off Old Dominion and people consider Old Dominion to be in and their RPI is very good, then all of a sudden, then all of a sudden there goes a team. A team is out that at large thought that they could get in. And so that's what we're going to do all week is watching these tournaments, seeing, looking for the upsets, seeing teams in and out. And then, of course, the big tournaments start over the weekend, or, you know, middle of the week and towards the weekend. And that's what we're going to see. Is there going to be a team that has a Big East run of them like we usually see? Are we going to have a 3-4 crazy overtime game till 4 in the morning like we have the last, you know, in a couple of years? This is great. And it is a precursor to the tournament itself. But, yeah, like you said, it's sort of like – It's the appetizer, but it's the amazing appetizer that might spoil your meal, you know, at this point. And you're going to watch it so much and get into it. But, you know, don't push it aside. Enjoy it because it's great.
It's like when you go to Iron Hill Brewery for the people around Philly and you've gone to one of those and get the cheesesteak egg rolls as the appetizer. And then you're like, why would I want anything after this? That's the conference tournament. You're the cheesesteak egg rolls of college basketball. By the way, your alma mater, for people who don't know, Richmond, 54 RPI, 139 strength of schedule. They are 13-3 in conference, but they come on. They're in the bottom of that bubble, right?
No, they are. No, there's no question. They have only lost 7 games this year. They're going to probably wind up with, you know, at least 25 wins, but the strength of schedule is bad, and they lost to tournament teams. They didn't come up big against teams that are going to be in. They lost to Xavier, lost to Temple, lost to Bucknell, which is probably going in, lost to ODU. So yeah, there's no question. They're on the bubble. That's what I mean. It makes me nervous. They need a run in this tournament, or they need everything to fall just right to make sure. And at this point, Lenardi even has them as one of those teams in the four play-in game, whatever they are. So
hey, you take that, wouldn't you?
I would take it. It's an opportunity, and it's another night to watch basketball. But yeah, that's what makes this week great for everyone. And then there's the teams that are on the bubble that are going to make their long run and also can play themselves in. So, you know, you enjoy it either way.
Well, that's what's fun for me about this. The week is sort of separated into two different weeks. There's the early part of the week where the Big East tournament starts on Tuesday now, which is sort of ridiculous, but it does. You get the early games in the major conferences, Tuesday, Wednesday, and even part of Thursday, where those teams need a win or need two wins to get into the NCAA tournament. Then you have the mid-major conference championships and those teams, the one-and-done leagues or the, like you said, with VCU, you know, where somebody's bubble's going to get burst if a team like that wins. That's early in the week. So the bubble is like the most important thing in the world for the NCAA tournament early in the week. And then the later you get into the week, you get the Big East championship. You get, which is always Saturday night and always awesome, you get the ACC championship and the Big 12. The Big 12 championship, it feels like an NBA game sometimes. I mean, we have such a Big East bias, but I always love the Big 12 title game because those two teams that are usually at the top of that always have national championship aspirations. They're all, those top four teams in the Big 12 are always so, so good. And I think it's going to happen again this year. You look at the Big 10 this year. Ohio State's the best team in the country. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that right now. But Purdue is really good. Wisconsin just got smoked, but what is that going to mean for them in the conference tournament? You get the second half of the week where it's big time teams sort of positioning themselves for seedings, positioning themselves to go on a roll like North Carolina is doing right now to see where they're set in the tournament. You get a huge injury late in the season that happens every year. One of these conference teams that's a Final Four contender is going to have a kid roll an ankle, and it's going to be an underlying storyline. I mean, it happened with BYU with this, you know, kid got suspended, but somebody's going to get hurt, and it's going to shake out. Is that going to hurt their seed? Is that going to hurt their chances when they get into the tournament? You cross your fingers that it's not a Big East team if you're one of us.
Yeah, no, you do. I mean, going back to what you said about the Big 12 for a second, it's sort of the same. You know, we trumpet ourselves as, you know, Eastern basketball fans. We're, for the most part, you know, Big East. Yeah, I mean, I don't have a team, a dog in the fight, but I do follow the Big East pretty closely. So all of a sudden, this is the time of year that we and a lot of people wake up to other parts of the country, and you start paying more attention to maybe the fourth or fifth team in the Big 12 or to some of the second team in the Pac-10. And all of a sudden, you're saying, wow, there's other teams out there that are pretty darn good. I better get myself familiar with them so I'm like a fool in my bracket next week. You know, and all of a sudden, when you – and we talked about, you know – look, again, we love Big East basketball. We talk about it very highly, but I was having a conversation with a friend recently saying, for all we trumpeted them up last year, they only had one team in the Final Four, and it was West Virginia. So you better start getting familiar with the teams from the country, because chances are you're going to have a weird Final Four. And for crying out loud, Butler was in the final last year. So, you know, this is sort of the study week, as it were, for even the serious college basketball fan. You don't have time to file this all, but now is the time where you do, and you devote yourself to it and start saying, all right, who are the sleepers? Who's good? You know, who's not as good as we thought? Who's better than I ever imagined?
Right. By the way, for people who are listening, if Nick's voice just got a little wonky, it's terrible weather out here. So hopefully, I mean, I could understand everything you said, but it sounded a little bit like Tron. You're a little bit like Jeff Bridges today.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was I supposed to use auto-tune on that part of the...
No, you're auto-tuning your bubble. But you know what the most interesting thing for the conference tournament week for me is the SEC always seems to have some team come out of nowhere and make a run to the semifinals or finals. Remember the year where, like, the tornado or whatever sort of weather, like, tore the roof off of the building, and it turned out they had to, like, play, like, 6 games on the same day, and Tennessee almost won the SEC title because of that, and they had no business being. I think I'm pretty sure it's Tennessee. This to me,
Mississippi State.
It was Mississippi State. Well, I was going to say that's the team. Mississippi State 9-7 in conference, 17-13 overall. That's the team that's going to make this run. That team, or Mississippi, Arkansas, one of these teams that's like 18-19 wins, but a crappy conference record, right around 500 in conference, is going to make some ridiculous run in the SEC tournament and going to put everybody on notice. And they're going to say, "Wait a minute, what?" Even Kentucky. I mean, Kentucky's 22-8 or 10-6. But somebody, Georgia, who's on the bubble. You know, I mean, Tennessee could be that team, 18-13, 8-8 in conference. One of those teams is going to make this ridiculous run that everyone's going to stop and pay attention to. It's so much fun. God, I'm just like, we went from being so depressed at the end of the show to so excited. And again, it goes back to sports. You know, I mean, I could talk about the fact that Tannenwald and I had a conversation over Instant Messenger today, how I think that San Diego State is a joke. They have two losses, both to BYU, and I think they played nobody. And he's like, "What are you talking about? They played St. Mary's, Gonzaga, Wichita State, and they won all those games." I don't care. I think San Diego State, no matter, I mean, depending on who they play, it is tailor-made that the NCAA tournament, the bracket people are going to put them on like a 2 or 3 line, even with two losses. They're not going to be a 1 seed. They could put them on a 2 or 3 line, and they're going to have to play like Villanova or West Virginia or Cincinnati in the second round. They're gonna put them up against one of these 10 Big East schools. The Big East, by the way, could get 11 schools in. Probably not. They'll probably get 10. Marquette lost to Seton Hall and ruined their season unless they make a run in the tournament. I mean, just a joke to lose to that team to end your season. But they could have gotten 11 teams in. Let's say the Big East gets 10. They're going to put one of those teams against San Diego State, and I think that the Big East is going to win that game. And then you look at a team that has two losses just to BYU, who's a great team, and I just don't think they have a chance in the tournament. And then, you know, they'll end up in the Final Four, and I'll look like an asshole. I mean, that's what's great about this tournament.
Oh, it is. No, I was having a conversation with a friend recently who said, I don't care what happens. I don't, you know, I think BYU is a joke, and they're not, and, you know, and this is before the suspension. And it was saying just, and it's just sort of just the name. Like, it's sort of like, I just don't trust BYU. And that's just the feel you're going to have. And they could wind up going to Final Four for all you know, or they could bomb out in the second round. And then you go, oh, you're validated. You do know much about college athletic. You know, that's what we get right now with everyone gets to be a closet expert. And, it's fun. And, you know, this year I promise this year I will not abstain from bracketology, from being in brackets.
Oh, you can't. No. I mean, it must have been fun for you last year, but.
It was a good time, but it was different. But this year I'll jump back in the pool.
Do you have anything else today?
God, I shouldn't have after all of this stuff. No, I spent my weekend in Mars, Pennsylvania. So I feel like I visited another planet. But no, the event driven part of my work life has been on full display over the last several days. Trips to Allentown, trips to Pittsburgh. So yesterday was a good veg out day. Catch up on the DVR and just sort of watch the rain fall and cry while I realize my gutters are about to fall off my house till I get them cleaned out.
Catch up on the DVR, dude. That sounds dangerous. The acid in the tomatoes would probably ruin the DVR.
Catch up? Yeah, you'd think so. Ah, so funny.
So Manchester United. I want to talk about this for 2 seconds. First of all, I almost can't even watch the video, but if you see the pictures of Nani's leg, I mean, it's just there's a hole in his leg. It's like almost to the bone. It's like disgusting. But Manchester United blacked out everyone after their game. So Alex Ferguson got fined for basically saying in the Chelsea match that the refs were against them. That when he saw who was refereeing the match, he knew that they were like basically just saying. It was in the bag for Chelsea all along. He gets fined, I believe suspended for that. So then they had a blackout of media after this Liverpool game. It turns out they got crushed by Liverpool 3-1. So people thought it was because of that, but I think they had it planned anyway. They didn't even talk to their own network, this MU.TV, which is the Manchester United television station. They didn't even talk to them. They had contractual obligations to talk to, you know, the BBC or whatever, and they just said, no, we're not doing it. This is the most powerful and famous team in the world, like of any sport. And they just said, we ain't talking. And it was after a bad loss in the middle of a race, and Arsenal had tied against Sunderland earlier in the week. And if Arsenal had won, they would be within 1 point. And then obviously the loss with Manchester United kept it still close. There's a chance that they could lose a league that they've been in front almost by a mile the whole season. It's sort of unraveling, and then they shut out the entire media. It's a fascinating sort of study in how to cover a team. Because do you rip them? I mean, most people are. Or do you just cover it as like, they're not talking to us? It's just so interesting. How do you do a story about a game when the team that lost, that should have at least tied, they were on the road, won't talk. I mean, it would be such a firestorm in this country, and I think hopefully people around here are covering it as if it's a huge story, because I just can't imagine. It would be like the New York Jets just saying, we're not talking after you know, a loss in a playoff game. It's amazing.
Or it'd be like yesterday if the whole Heat team said, we're not going to talk, after all making all this noise about how, you know, I'm getting serious now, all my soldiers are with me by LeBron, and then losing four in a row. And if they just said, we're shutting the locker room out, I mean, can you imagine? That would be the lead story. It already is the lead story in SportsCenter. It would be the lead story for two reasons. Now it's like, oh, they blew another game, and they won't talk to us. Right. So, you know, fill in the blank, any major team not talking, and I think people get the gravity of that situation. It's ridiculous. And there's no worse way to draw attention to yourself than to do something of that nature as a sports team, because all of a sudden, not only have you highlighted yourself in a negative way with your play on the field, but you've made it so that you've, like I said, you've given them a second story to write, and all of a sudden now you're even more, the scrutiny becomes even greater. And I don't know why they think that's a good idea, but it's never.
Well, in this case, it's like a one-time thing. I don't think they're going to shut them out forever, and I think their point was like, screw you, because the last time I talked to you, I got fined and suspended, so I won't talk to you. And we'll see how you like that. It's interesting. It's very interesting because it speaks to does the team need the media? Does the sport or the team need the media more, or does the media need the team more? And in this case with Manchester United, I actually think the media needs the team more than the team needs the media. Now, maybe not. Maybe they can write the story that there is no story, or you know what I mean? Like that becomes the story. But how long can you do that? So it is interesting. I mean, when Barry Bonds or whoever freezed out the media, it became annoying because they couldn't get stories. Chase Utley never talks to anybody. And eventually the media just gave up on writing that story because we got sick of hearing about it. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out with the most popular and most famous club in the world. Because if they keep freezing people out, but then they win the title, who cares, you know? I mean, their fans don't care. All they care about is winning. So it's going to be really, really interesting. Anyway, so I apologize for hammering everybody on the head with this, but we've been teasing it for a month or for at least 2 weeks. I thought, again, we'd get to 600, and maybe we will. Maybe we'll be reinvigorated, and maybe this will prompt somebody to call us, and then we can do it for money, and then we'll do it forever. Forever. Deal it on the DLPodcast.com is the email. PressCoverage.us for now is the website. Talk to everybody tomorrow. Jonah Carey is going to be on this week because he's got a book that's coming out, so that might actually be tomorrow. If not, it'll be on Wednesday, hopefully. So that plus baseball stuff plus college basketball, it should be a fun week. Talk to everybody tomorrow.